Welcome to another episode of Acts of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, Kat. I'm kind of sad we're not together this time.
I know, me too. That was a really good time, sitting in that little corner next to the hotel door, with me inside the closet.
Our little production corner.
Yeah, I think it ended up going really well, though.
It did, actually. The sound quality came out shockingly well, all things considered.
Extremely well. We're recording this on a Tuesday. I've been home back in San Francisco for exactly one day. Nadia has to go to an event, and I'm going to be out of town next week. So as a consequence, we're having to record this one a little bit early, but that's okay because there's a whole bunch of news to talk about.
There is. The news never stops. The fun never stops.
Well, we're going to talk about Jason Schreier's expose about Anthem over at Kotaku. We're going to talk a little bit about rumors of a new Naoki Yoshida-directed project for Square Enix that could be Final Fantasy 16. Ooh. And we're going to wrap up PAX up a little bit. And we're going to talk about the games that didn't make the top 25 RPG countdown, of which there are a few notable RPGs, and I think it's worth giving them their just due. As always, Acts of the Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. If you're enjoying the podcast, please make sure to rate it over on iTunes. It gives us a little boost, gives us some visibility, and plus, you know, it feels good to read good reviews. It makes the 5 hours or so I spend every Friday putting this dang thing together all worth it.
Please keep Cat alive.
Please keep Cat alive. And if you enjoy the podcast, can I recommend subscribing to our newsletter, which comes out every Wednesday? It includes a little op-ed from Nadia and myself. Nadia, what did you write about last week?
I might have covered this the last time we talked, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I wrote about basically how the digital future that we have going on right now and how that affects this special feeling I got as a kid buying RPGs. Cause, I mean, of course, I bought tons of games as a kid, but something about buying RPGs was really special, and it could be because, number one, they were typically more expensive because memory cost a lot back then. Long lived they were. Like, you were really buying into an experience, whereas, like, you know, let's be honest, a lot of other games that were of that era could be returned after a weekend. And for another point, I think that RPGs were much less likely to end up in the used bin, so you couldn't easily get Final Fantasy III used back then, is what I'm saying.
I just miss the feelies. Like, I miss the cloth maps and the source books and everything.
Oh, yeah, those too.
Yeah, and they came in those big old boxes. It was really cool. These days, you get a lot of that stuff just through the ultra special super duper edition.
Yeah.
During our PAX, one of our PAX East Dreamcast panel, wherein we invited people to come play Soul Calibur and such with us, which, by the way, was a really fun panel.
It was.
We gave away like this gigantic Valkyria Chronicles 4 hardened edition. And I was like, wow, man, that's really cool. But it's for like the 10 people who want that monstrosity in their house.
Well, until we gave it away, it served as our microphone stand for a while there when we recorded last week.
Yes, its service will not be forgotten, Nadia.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Okay, let's get to the news. Obviously, as I mentioned, as of this recording, it will be several days ago by the time this podcast is out, but whatever. Jason Schreier's big expose on Anthem came out, and it was pretty much what we expected. There were a few things that stood out. A lot of it was not that surprising.
Yeah.
Seeing things like BioWare is being severely hurt by the talent drain that is happening. Definitely not a surprise. Other things like that. A few things that did stand out to me was the flying didn't get implemented until like 2017, which was a real shock to me because flying is so fundamental to the experience of that game.
Yeah, I was really surprised about that. I thought, like, you know, just flying was the... It sounds like at first, like, flying was a big part of this game, but of course the whole thing, as development went on, it all kind of fell apart and they had to take flying out just to make the whole damn thing work. And then they put it back in to impress... I can't remember who they were impressing, a CEO at the time, just to kind of get the project, you know, going again. There's some pretty crazy stories in there. As you say, there's a lot that's kind of, you know, expected, but it's a very depressing read because it sounds like two major problems was there was just a lack of direction, just the talent drain and the lack of direction. It is quite depressing, especially since it sounds like they lost part of the talent, or a lot of their talent, because they're like, hey, you know Frostbite Engine, you're going to be working on FIFA, and BioWare can fend for itself for a while.
Yeah, because it turns out FIFA makes a lot of money. A lot more.
A big surprise.
I mean, things like they were calling in the central support for Frostbite and basically being backburnered because Battlefield and FIFA get precedence over the RPG catalog. And I actually was tweeting, I was like, I'd be really interested to know what the financials for, you know, a game like Skyrim would be versus a game like, say, FIFA. And people were pointing out that it, maybe not necessarily the raw revenue, but just how much growth they get out of it year on year.
Yes.
Though yes. I've heard that Ultimate Team, this might be the first year that Ultimate Team actually goes down rather than goes up, which I'm sure is
scandal.
Not a great thing, because everybody's so burned out on FIFA, you know. You can only spend that much money on Ultimate Team for so long, right? And their entire business model is increasingly about squeezing the whales, but I digress. When it comes to RPGs, yeah, maybe RPGs have a longer tail, but they're thinking quarterly. They're not thinking annual necessarily.
Exactly, yeah.
So, other things that stood out to me, how the different studios were feuding with one another.
There was a bit of a feud going on between BioWare in Edmonton, Alberta, and BioWare in, where's the second office? Is it Houston, Texas?
Austin,
Texas. And
the one in Montreal as well.
That's right. And that one got shuttered. And I think they integrated that staff into probably Edmonton. But it's kind of like, guys, don't fight, because up here, you know, just Edmonton is kind of considered, or Calgary and Alberta in general is considered like kind of the Texas of Canada. And it's like, you're fighting with Texas. This shouldn't be.
Wait a minute. Texas fighting Texas. I never even thought of that angle.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. Yeah, I thought it was very counterproductive to read stories. And maybe this isn't necessarily accurate, because obviously, even though you talk to like 20 people, you're still relying on the anecdotes and the perception of people. But they were saying things like, the general perception in Edmonton was that Austin was the B team or even the C team. And
right.
They didn't really get a say in how things were going. And then, so of course, Austin was being like, well, we got some ideas, guys, and we're pointing out some problems here with Anthem. And by the way, we worked on Star Wars The Old Republic. You may have heard of it. It's this MMORPG. And you're making the same mistakes that we made.
They're not listening. Oh, they shut us out. Oh, they're not answering our calls.
Help, guys, we have experience with this thing.
It is very, very sad. I feel like, again, that's the lack of leadership coming into play, because there should have been someone, and there was someone at the very last second to wrangle everyone and say, okay, here's the direction, here's where we're going. But by then it was practically too late.
I mean, obviously we're Monday morning quarterbacking this on information that we're hearing through journalisming, which it paints a pretty accurate picture. It's hard to know what was exactly going through the minds of the leadership there. But when you hear reports that one studio is looking down on another, I mean, that's a big problem, right?
No, absolutely. It is probably a problem in general with a lot of game studios that are, you know, rely more and more on telecommuting.
Yeah. And then there are stories like, they didn't want to do another Mass Effect or Dragon Age with the big villains and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then once Dragon Age Inquisition finished, they brought in one of the writers, David Gator, I believe.
Yeah, it was
Gator. And he came up with kind of what the Anthem story is now, with the, you know, the evil doctor villain and that kind of thing. And I was like, what the hell is this? It's interesting to hear what the original concept was, this idea of it was originally going to be called Beyond rather than Anthem. But they couldn't secure the copyright with that name. So
yeah,
they ended
it sounds
up going
like the copyright was too expensive.
And the idea of Beyond was that you were inside a fort or something on a hostile planet, and you were venturing out and fighting these giant monsters. And they were comparing it to things like Shadow of the Colossus. And one of their proof of concepts was you'd go with your friends into this volcano, you know, fight a big monster, whatever, come back. And the idea is you've got the hub. You're venturing out from the space into this extremely hostile planet, and how long can you survive, right?
Yeah, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. But they couldn't figure out how to make it work in the context of an online, seamless kind of experience where tons of people are running around. Maybe that was their first mistake. was trying to turn it into a full-blown, huge online experience. Maybe they, and again, this is just Monday morning quarterbacking and everything. Maybe they should have been thinking more in the mindset of, this is a solo experience, but with very strong co-op.
Right, elements. like Monster Hunter World.
Not even Monster Hunter, because you see people in the world of Monster Hunter all the time, right? But though I suppose in Monster Hunter, you have the big hub with all the people in it. And then once you head into the world, you're more or less alone.
You are. Yeah, it's a very kind of lonely sort of place, although not really like, you know, in a bad way.
Yeah, but then you can summon in people to help you.
Yes.
So I could totally see a situation in which you have a hub similar to that of Destiny. And then when you go venture out into the world, you can choose to go with public groups or with your friends.
Yes.
And then you're venturing out and there aren't and you're kind of in your own shard.
Yeah, it probably doesn't help that EA told them, do not say the word Destiny. Don't even suggest this is like Destiny. It's nothing like Destiny, guys.
I'm not sure if it was the leadership or EA itself, but yeah, they definitely were not talking about Destiny. They were ignoring Destiny. It's like, don't be Destiny, which I guess is fine in the context of we don't want to just rehash everything that they're doing. But as they were pointing out, they are the market leader.
They kind of are. And a lot of people, a lot of comparisons I saw that were brought up to that statement is how, like, for example, Nintendo during the Wii U, you know, problematic era there, it's like they had just, or they pretended to just have no idea what was going on, like about like what Microsoft was doing, what PlayStation was doing. They were just kind of pretending to be above it all, and they weren't. These are things that work. For a reason, give them a look. I heard something also about the original director for Final Fantasy XIV never playing World of Warcraft. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think World of Warcraft was that big in Japan.
That's true. That's totally fair. But there was definitely that split between East and West that didn't really help out anyone in the end.
No, I don't think so. So what do you think all of this means for BioWare?
I hope they're okay. There are one thing I took away from the piece as well is that there are a lot of people abandoning ship for an independent studio that one of the creators founded. So, I just see more people kind of leaving, jumping ship to go indie. I see just more people leaving in general. I don't know what this means for the next Dragon Age, if anything.
Few things that stand out to me. One is, I thought it was interesting that they categorized Mass Effect as the Enterprise, in which it was very focused, everybody at their stations, Casey Hudson is in charge, versus Dragon Age, which they called a pirate ship.
A pirate ship going from port to port.
Yeah, going around port to port, drunkenly going yo-ho-ho. And another thing that stood out to me was talking about BioWare Magic.
Yes.
This idea of how they were always crunching, always crunching, always crunching, but somehow it always came out okay.
The hockey stick metaphor.
And the worst thing that could happen to them was that Dragon Age Inquisition was critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
Because they were like, this is totally unsustainable.
Yeah, that was like, that's a very, very worrying statement right there.
So yeah, apparently Anthem has been moved over to BioWare Austin, which should be interesting because Star Wars The Old Republic has virtually no resources over there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll do a competent job stewarding it. I don't know if they will do a competent job continuing to build new content. And that game needs a complete overhaul. And BioWare seems confident that they can overhaul it and fix it, but I don't know. You know, they need a Diablo loot point 2.0 type overhaul, or
they really do,
or a, you know, Taken King type overhaul to really fix a lot of the very fundamental problems that that game has. I mean, it's things like they were talking about how in Destiny, every game feels different and good. Mm-hmm. And that was always like one of the very strongest points of Destiny and why people stuck with it for so long.
Yeah.
And subsequently, but BioWare didn't really know how to do that. They didn't have the expertise because they're a bunch of RPG nerds, right?
Right.
So, and then the other problem is, and they're kind of wondering is, you know, they're all heading on to Dragon Age 4 now. We'll see how that goes. I haven't really seen a Dragon Age game that's truly that amazing. I like Dragon Age Inquisition, okay. But a lot of the people who were super, you know, involved with Dragon Age, they're long gone.
Yeah, exactly. And it also matters a lot how much EA wants to invest in the post, you know, Anthem's post-game and versus just kind of trashing the whole thing, and I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. In the meantime, they're building Dragon Age on the code base of Anthem, so that should be interesting.
Yeah, you know, heck, anything that has me flying around, like, hey, let me fly in a dragon.
I bet I'll bet anything is going to be like a Witcher-type game, where it's like a single-player action game. You're a person with a sword.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, if you got this, like, ability to fly, it'd be a shame if they didn't use it.
Why are you so hung up on flying?
Well, who wouldn't be hung up on flying, Kat?
Not me. I don't care.
I like flying.
I guess it's okay. Like, I know that flying around on a dragon would be pretty cool. That would be a good sting to a trailer where
yes.
you see the name Dragon Age, right? And uh-huh. then the final shot of the trailer is the main character clambering up onto a dragon and then taking off and flying away. And it goes 2020.
2020.
It's not going to be 2020. It's going to be 2022.
I was going to say 2022.
2023.
And then 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Sure not going to be this year, Dragon Age 4.
Hell no.
Because they got a lot of work to do, because they are staffing up from a skeleton crew, and they haven't, as far as I can tell, they haven't even started production yet, so they're still going to go through pre-production, but okay. So anyway, that's Anthem. That's a game that we've talked about to death, and yeah, well, the problems are well cataloged. A lot of what Schreier reported, you know, kind of not surprising at all. Other stuff, maybe even a little worse than we thought. Let's talk about more exciting news. A game that was saved, Final Fantasy XIV, in large part because of Naoki Yoshida and his team. I've heard rumors for some time now that Yoshida is potentially working on Final Fantasy XVI. These are all secondhand rumors. These are not like primary source rumors, which is why we haven't written about it. But yeah, that's the word on the street, is that Yoshida is working on Final Fantasy XVI. And here we come. We find out that he is working on a next-generation key franchise.
Yeah.
And it sure sounds like Final Fantasy 16 to me.
That is a very real possibility. I just yelled out Chrono Trigger, but that's more for, like, you know, shits and giggles. you brought up an interesting point, I think, in Slack earlier today, which was, like, what if it's, you know, another Final Fantasy 14-style MMO? And I'd rather it wouldn't be.
Me too. I would be extremely disappointed if it were another MMO.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would because, I still think there's a lot of legs left in Final Fantasy XIV.
I do. And I would be annoyed if they just decided that they're going to start all over and ask everybody to buy into a whole new subscription. I mean, you got to figure that Final Fantasy XIV has at least one more major expansion in it, right?
Oh, at least, yes. Easily. Yeah.
I wonder how much it's paying the bills over there.
You know what? If they're still getting people to sign up for subscriptions, and we both saw at PAX that they are pushing it hard, it's probably doing quite fine. There's not too many MMOs out there that can ask for a subscription base. Even Elder Scrolls Online couldn't really handle that. So if people are still paying, I'm sure they're doing okay.
So the things that we know about Yoshida, he's kind of a young Turk over at Square Enix. He built up a lot of credibility when he took over Final Fantasy XIV and saved it. He is a very media-friendly, and we've done a lot of interviews with him over the years.
Yes.
He's known for being a huge Final Fantasy VII fan and really into Final Fantasy's lore in general.
Yes, as 14 attests to.
Yes, but he's specifically referenced Final Fantasy VII the times that I've interviewed him. So he's also a big World of Warcraft fan. For what it's worth.
Oh, that's good. See, there you go. We do have Japanese people who love World of Warcraft.
Yes, he is a key example of a Japanese person who loves World of Warcraft. As far as I can tell, like, the content, he's able to churn out a lot of content, and he's able to do it in a relatively timely fashion. It looks good.
Like, yes.
The man and his team have kind of worked miracles, so if you give him the resources, I imagine that whatever he creates is going to be really good. And yeah. Given his experience, I have to believe it's going to be online focused. I don't like that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering that myself. I do wonder how that's going to work. And I'm also wondering when we'll finally get some kind of confirmation one way or the other. It'd be nice if we could get an announcement at E3, but I guess I don't see that happening.
Oh, that would be really early, wouldn't it? I mean, it's been a couple years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with
Square's MO is usually to announce something at the beginning of a generation.
Yeah, that's true.
Final Fantasy 13 was announced at the beginning, like at the announcement of the PS3, right?
Oh, shit. God, was it that long ago?
It was 2006. Yeah. That was when they unveiled it, along with Versus 13. And we all know how that went. Final Fantasy 15, I believe, was officially confirmed in 2014, mm-hmm. at the beginning of the current generation, maybe even at that particular E3, along with Kingdom Hearts 3.
Right.
So it makes a lot of sense to me. Who knows? Maybe Square will come out during Microsoft's big next-gen reveal this E3 and show us stuff.
Exclusive Final Fantasy 16, exclusive to Xbox, whatever. Oh, dear.
That's never going to happen.
That's never going to happen, but it'd be hilarious.
Yeah, they're barely even putting things on the Xbox as it speaks, because the Xbox is such a dead letter over in Japan still.
It always has been, hasn't it? Has it ever even come close to ever garnering any kind of an audience over there?
The people who play Xbox over in Japan are usually kind of more into Western games in general.
Uh-huh.
And that makes them a very niche audience.
Right. Like, God bless them for going for it.
They do exist.
They do. I'm sure they do, and they're very... I'd like to talk to one sometime.
But they're
like
playing Halo in Japanese. You know, they're not.
Right.
I know that Microsoft made a huge push to try and capture Japan in 2005, you know, with the Xbox 360.
Yeah, like Blue Dragon.
Blue Dragon, Tales of Vesperia, that sort of thing. But
yeah.
That didn't work out. And then all those games ultimately came out on the PS3.
Yeah. Yep.
So, as for what Yoshida's working on, we can only speculate. This is what I will tell you that I wish Final Fantasy 16 would look like, Nadia.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that they would go back to basics and do a classically turn-based Final Fantasy with a job system but has modern graphics.
Yeah, I would actually love that very, very much. I would dig that pretty hard.
I would like them to get back to the roots. I would like them. I don't think that turn-based gameplay is completely incompatible with AAA blockbuster kind of gameplay.
No.
And I think that executives need to break out of the conventional wisdom and try something. I really wish that they had stuck with the turn-based gameplay in Final Fantasy VII Remake. And I can't begin to express to you how much it bums me out that they turned it into an action RPG. And it was inevitable, but the mindset at Square Enix seems to be that turn-based gameplay is just not mainstream, and that everything they do has to be action-oriented, and that sucks.
Yeah, I am a little disappointed in that, although I think Crisis Core was kind of more action-based, and that was a great game, but...
I didn't say action games are necessarily bad.
True, and
action
that's more
games
of a spin-off.
Can be very good. I like Witcher 3. It's the number 3 on this freaking RPG list. But I like turn-based games, and
so
I think
Final
Fantasy has gone down this bizarre rabbit hole of trying to translate these elaborate systems into action gameplay, and that's how we ended up with Final Fantasy 15, a very weird game.
Yeah, it's a weird game, all right. When was the last time we had a kind of a turn-based system in Final 13. Fantasy? Was it 13?
Yep.
I never played 13, so I didn't know they even had a turn-based system.
You didn't play 13?
I didn't play 13 at all.
You didn't miss much.
I was just like, yeet. Nope.
Yeah, no, 13 was the last really serious turn-based system. And then they modified it for 13-2. And then Lightning Returns, they modified it even more into kind of this weird kind of... It was still turn-based, if I recall correctly. But it was one-on-one, because Lightning was your primary character. It was pretty cool, actually. Yeah, I really liked the battle system in that one. I think Lightning Returns is criminally underrated.
Yeah, you're not the only one to say that. A lot of people seem to really like Lightning Returns, but I think as we've discussed here before, it probably didn't start out as a Final Fantasy 13 game, maybe?
I mean, the rumor was that Trias was working on Valkyrie Profile, and then it got turned into Lightning Returns.
I am so sorry, Kat.
And I gotta say, like, if you had just replaced Lightning with Lenneth, and put her in that world with that kind of system and that kind of gameplay, oh my god, I would have loved that.
Oh, that's a bit of a heartbreaker for you. I'm sorry.
It's fine. I got a really kick-ass Final Fantasy game out of it. I thought Lightning Returns was great.
I should probably give it a try, since I hear it's not at all connected to 13. It's just Lightning has to be in it.
Yeah, no. No, it's kind of connected, but it's so weird by this point. Because 13 has its own very particular story, right?
Right.
That stands alone. You don't need the other games that come after it. And then it just really goes off the rails with 13-2 and Lightning Returns. Like, you wouldn't even believe, in ways that you wouldn't even believe. By Lightning Returns, you're like, what is even happening in this story anymore?
That sounds very squarish.
Yes. So what are your hopes and dreams for Final Fantasy 16, Nadia?
I very much like what you just described to me. I would like a good
surprise.
A nice menu base. I mean, I really love the hell out of Dragon Quest XI, and that's as menu based as it gets. All about, like, if it's a good experience, and you absolutely can have a good experience with a menu based game.
I'm sure Square would just be like, look, if you want menu based, just play freaking Dragon Quest.
Well, yeah, Square, but I also want a Final Fantasy that's menu-based, because that's a Final Fantasy that I grew up with.
And it's a very different thing, right? Because Dragon Quest is always stuck to the same battle system, whereas Final Fantasy has always kind of taken the battle systems that it had and really innovated on them in really interesting ways. I mean, Final Fantasy VIII is one of the examples, right? Final Fantasy X was awesome.
Yeah.
From a battle system standpoint, it was a little easy.
Yeah.
It was a little easy, but I loved the ability to swap in characters on the fly. It had a fast-paced feel to it. It was enjoyable. And, of course, the job system is beyond reproach. I think they can do a lot with a turn-based system. So we'll see, though. We'll see, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. Last thing, we got back from PAX East. By the way, our company is owned by PAX East, so we're contractually obligated to talk about it, I guess. Nadia, what did you see that was RPG-related at PAX East?
Well, I can't talk too much about it because of embargo, but I did see Indivisible.
Okay, so you saw Indivisible. I saw SteamWorld Quest.
Yes, I'm jealous. I never got a chance to go play it.
It's going to be at the end of April. I think that game is looking really good.
Yeah, here's a big surprise. Like, everything that they have done with the SteamWorld universe has been just fantastic, even just completely different genres. Like, they just seem to nail it every time.
Oh, look. Another turn-based game that's looking really good.
Look over here, Square.
Yeah, this one has cards in it, but I wouldn't necessarily call it a card game. There are some drawing mechanics and that sort of thing. But what it really comes down to is you have different skills that you can use depending on the cards that you end up drawing. You can discard cards with each turn. But what you're trying to get is some synergy with your team. The way that you choose each individual character's skill set is by coming up with a particular deck. It reminds me a little bit of Slay the Spire, actually, which is a really neat game for Steam. The graphics are awesome. The writing is top class. And this game really punishes you if you don't use the systems properly. I feel like they were trolling me a little bit, Nadia.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think they were trolling me in the sense that they put me into a later boss battle.
Oh.
And I don't think they really did a good job of optimizing the deck. And so I got killed. Because the deck that they had was very offense-focused and just did not have nearly enough support spells or buffs or anything like that. And as a consequence, I just got steamrolled. Like, I had no real way to heal myself. And I'm like, you're trolling me.
Steamrolled and SteamWorld. What a world.
I want them to make SteamWorld Heist 2, because, oh my God.
That was such a great... I would love to see SteamWorld Heist 2. They did a SteamWorld Dig 2, and that was fantastic.
Yeah, SteamWorld Quest seems like a perfect fit for the Nintendo Switch, and as it is a launch exclusive for the Nintendo Switch, that's great. It'll be out on frickin' everything at a certain point. It'll be out on
PS4. Oh, absolutely.
But, yeah, it'll be on your phone. It'll be on everything. So, but if you've never played SteamWorld Heist, I strongly recommend it. It's really good. Oh, also, I talked to the Outer Worlds folks, and by the time you listen to this podcast, my interview with them will be up. I got a really long article in the works right now about it.
I'm sure everyone's going to be eager to read that one because that's a big game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I got to talk to like four of the developers, including Tim Kane and Leonard Boyarsky. Tim Kane's a really cool dude. Tim Kane, he was creator of Fallout. Yeah, and he's been in the industry a long time. And often you see one of two things from developers who are still in the business. Either they're extremely burned out and cynical.
Yes.
And they don't care and they're just trying to make money. Or they still really love games. And Tim Kane, I think, is in the latter category.
Like are always fun interviews.
Yeah, he's just into it, you know.
Yes.
So it was fun to talk about. He and Leonard Boyarsky have a really good rapport going back and forth. And once they got going, it was fun to listen to them talk about all the different mechanics and everything. So That's cool. Outer Worlds itself, I mean, it's looking good. I think that fans should temper their expectations just a tiny bit because, I mean, the team acknowledges themselves that it's a lower budget game than they
a lot of people
probably imagine. So you're not probably not going to get a Skyrim level experience out of this, but it could be really cool.
Yeah, probably. And that reminds me, I actually got to play Dragon Quest Builders 2.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. One thing I wrote about on our site, and you can see it, is one major thing they improved was there's no chapter. It's not a chapter-based game anymore. It used to be that you would finish a chapter, and you would lose all your items, you know, weapons, building material, name it, and you'd have to start all over again. And they got rid of that for Dragon Quest Builders 2. As far as I know, you can keep most, if not all, of your stuff as you travel from island to island. And that's how you kind of restore the world now, as you are sailing around the world and restoring these islands. And so I'm really looking forward to it. It looks like there's a lot more going on. Like, your NPCs can help you farm. They can help you fight. The AI seems much improved. Like I said in my preview in the first game, mostly they just kind of got in your way and didn't do much else. So that's coming out on July the 12th, I believe. One thing I will say, though, is that there was a little bit of hiccup with the Switch version that I don't think was present on the PS4 version, but I'm probably still going to go with the Switch version anyway.
I think that the Nintendo Switch version is probably the best way to play this, in my opinion.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah. So,
Because
I wonder how many people have double-dipped with a PS4 and a Nintendo Switch.
Me.
I mean, yeah, but you work in this business?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you have an Xbox too, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, an Xbox as well, I suppose. Yeah, so, I mean, but I'm thinking about people who are outside of the games business. I'd be curious to know how many just own a Nintendo Switch and don't own any of the other next-gen consoles. I imagine a lot of people have a PS4 already because, you know, the PS4 has a lot of penetration and it's a very different experience, and the Switch can kind of augment that experience. But
yeah, I mean, like, for example, my younger brother, he does not have a PS4, but he does have a Switch, and that's mostly because, like, he bought the Switch for his kids, but then he discovered, oh, hey, I love this thing too. But he doesn't really have time to go around playing a whole bunch of game systems.
Right. So yeah, the upshot of all of that is basically, I think people are going to buy a version for the system that they have.
Exactly. Yeah, and, well, a lot of people have the Switch. And even, like, okay, I have my choice between the PS4 and Switch version of Dragon Quest Builders 2. And I know that even if the graphics aren't absolutely perfect on the Switch, I'm probably going to go with it anyway, because I played the original Dragon Quest Builders on the Switch, and I played it on the PlayStation 4, and just, it is a very, very good handheld experience.
Talk me into Dragon Quest Builders 2.
Do you like Minecraft?
No, I hate it.
Well, here's your problem, Kat. Well, I mean, one thing I love about Dragon Quest Builders, and it's the same with 2 as well, is that, yes, it is Minecraft-y, but you do have that focus of a story. You have that focus of a quest that you need, of these ends that you need to meet. For myself, who is a kind of a story nerd in terms of Dragon Quest, you have that fallen hero timeline, which continues in Dragon Quest Builders 2 as well, and I find that really interesting and really fascinating. As someone who, like, you know, kind of made that choice to join the Dragon Lord as a kid and regretted it because it crashes your game and it's terrifying. But if you don't like the idea of kind of building up a world and, like, restoring it with a Dragon Quest sort of theme to it, even though there is, like, some really good fighting mechanics at work, I don't know if I could say, oh, you will absolutely love this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think that the Dragon Quest theme is almost enough to talk me into it, but
yeah,
and I do like building stuff. I like customizing forts and everything, so
you might like this then.
I might like this. It depends on whether or not I have time to play it, especially because Fire Emblem Heroes, I think, is coming out this summer.
Fire Emblem Heroes or
Fire Emblem Three Houses? You know, the other
three,
one.
Three Heroes. Yeah. Oh shit, that's right.
That's a weird looking game.
It is. I'm very much looking forward to seeing what the hell it is, though. I'm curious, like, play the shit out of that.
I didn't realize that Team Ninja was involved.
Oh, shit. Are they really?
Yeah. My understanding is that Team Ninja is involved with Fire Emblem Three Houses, and we'll see how that goes, because they did an okay job with Nioh, and they also did a good job with, what was that other game? Oh, Dynasty Warriors. the Dragon Quest Fire Emblem, the Fire Emblem Warriors thing. Yeah, that they worked on that.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, I can't really foresee Nintendo saying, "You, hey guys, go ahead and release something subpar. We'll be totally okay with you screwing up one of our biggest cash cows."
But why is an action developer working on this?
I don't know.
I don't like that.
Well, maybe
your action on my turn-based tactics.
I'm sorry, Kat.
It's okay. I'll play Fire Emblem.
I'll have a discussion with them.
You should, Nadia.
I'll have a chat. Kick down their door. I will.
I have Fire Emblem Heroes on my phone, though. I can play that into eternity.
Well, there you go. Yeah, when we first heard about Fire Emblem Heroes, you were swearing up and down how it's going to be the worst thing ever. And now it's your life. You did. You hated the whole idea of Fire Emblem Heroes. I was like, oh, maybe it'll be okay. Free to play. Fine. Whatever. I can accept it for what it is. But you were very angry about it.
It's fine. I don't think it's a good game.
No, but it's not you're just have a religion against it or anything.
Shout out to Christian Nutt, who works on that game.
Does he seriously?
Yeah, he does.
That's hilarious.
So anyway, okay. Yeah, let's continue on to the next section and let's wrap up the top 25 RPG countdown and talk a little bit about the RPGs that didn't make the list, but still deserve to be mentioned. Okay, Nadia, the top 25 RPG countdown is complete. You can find all of them by checking out on the site. We've got write-ups for all of them and everything. It's really neat. Man, that was a really exhausting thing to do.
I'm sure it was. You did the bulk of the work, but it exhausted me, so it must have exhausted you 10 times as much.
I sure did do the bulk of the work, but...
I talked.
Yeah, you did talk, and you did lend a lot of interesting ideas and... Thanks a lot to people like David Craddock and Matthew Allen and all of the other people who came on the show to talk about it. Jason Wilson, Rowan Kaiser, Shane Bentenhausen, etc. It was an interesting experience to put together the list. Putting together a good list is really hard.
Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah, because you often... It's so arbitrary in so many ways. It's just like going, okay, is Phantasy Star 4 better than, Lunar... Or Ultima Underworld or Undertale?
Yeah,
I just gotta try to establish some metrics and hope that it kind of goes. And I was kind of looking for, games that have really held up and stood the test of time and still offer something to the RPG space and are, really just great on their own, and that I can recommend to people. So, and also I didn't want to put Skyrim on it. So yeah, Skyrim's not on this list, but we did have Morrowind and Fallout New Vegas. So people who like open world RPGs, I would recommend those two games over Skyrim anyway.
I guess so. I haven't played Morrowind myself, so I have to I'd have to decide. But Fallout, I've always just kind of preferred the whole medieval themes of Skyrim to the sci-fi themes of Fallout. But that's just personal preference.
I like Skyrim a lot, actually. And I still play it from time to time. I have a character that I liked. I liked being able to mod the living heck out of it. Mm-hmm. I just think that the other games are better. So yeah, there's some of the other games that did not ultimately make this list. A big one, and we were just talking about BioWare earlier, but a big one is Dragon Age. Yeah. Did you ever play any of the Dragon Age games, Nadia?
I played the first one for part of the way through, and I just kind of... I eventually bounced. I kind of liked it, but I was just... I just couldn't really get that invested in it.
How far did you get?
Oh, I don't remember. It was a very long time ago. I do remember there was a dog, and the dog was good.
Oh, yeah, the dog. That was a character, wasn't it?
Yeah, it belonged to... What was his name? Alistair? I can't remember what the...
Oh, yeah, Alistair. Wow, you remember the name.
Yeah, well, he was kind of neat. He was funny.
Yeah, he was fun. I liked him. And... yeah, the problem with the dog, if I recall correctly, was that he didn't fit very well into the party.
Yeah.
He was kind of hard to use.
He was very hard to use. I discovered that very quickly. But I kind of wanted to use him because he was a dog.
Magic was really OP in that game.
Was it really? Yeah. I don't think I used it very much.
Yeah, the thing that makes me sad is that Dragon Age Origins was kind of the last gasp of the classic isometric RPG. Turn-based, sort of turn-based, semi-turn-based. Because you could pause the game, set up all of your abilities, and then let them go.
Right.
It was kind of the last gasp of that. In the blockbuster game space, it's hard to imagine a game being like that in the blockbuster world. And I know I just was advocating for turn-based games, but I'm thinking more in terms of, you know, Japanese games, right?
Right.
I mean, we have isometric RPGs, but they're by and large considered to be pretty niche propositions.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but when it comes to Dragon Age Inquisition or Dragon Age Origins, I think that's the best of them.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone will argue with you, but that's what we got down.
Now, I mean, Dragon Age 2 had, I mean, the final act of Dragon Age 2 was just a complete disaster. it was horrible. Ouch. It was not great. It was interesting up until that point. And then they had this whole idea of being in a city and watching as it changes over 10 years, but they didn't really do a great job of executing on it.
Oh, I see. I was going to ask you, what happened? Did the story fall apart? Did the gameplay fall apart?
Well, the idea is that it just has a long period of time where, you know, you have time skips and that kind of thing.
Right.
And so you get to see the consequences of your actions a little more. And mm-hmm. what it really came down to was cut and paste dungeons. And I hear Dragon Rowan Kaiser like yelling into the sky and being like, no, you totally misunderstand Dragon Age 2. But he's like one of the few that's like really willing to defend that game.
Right.
Dragon Age Inquisition I liked a lot, actually. But you know, back when I reviewed it and I gave it a very good review, I think that a lot of the complaints about the fetch quests are certainly valid. I hate fetch quests. Uh-huh.
But yeah.
Also, that stuff was all optional.
That's true, yeah.
And if it's all optional, it's hard for me to be like, okay, yeah, it deserves criticism for sure. But as long as it's not mandatory, I don't care.
Yeah,
you don't have to go collect every single berry or whatever.
But berry picking is fun.
No, it's not.
Not really.
No.
It's pretty terrible. I wouldn't go again.
The thing that I liked the most about Dragon Age Inquisition was going into a new area and having the map being completely dark. And then as you go, it slowly but surely expands outward, and often the areas were extremely beautiful. And
yeah.
You would find one major interesting quest to undertake, and that kind of turned into that little storyline for that particular area.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah, because I do like filling out maps in big open world games. I think that's a lot of fun, and I do like the idea of it kind of like having the our own little pockets of narrative.
I thought the romance was handled really well. And I really liked that some of the subquests, I like how they resolved the, I can't remember, the Grey Wardens. Yeah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
I liked what they did with the Grey Wardens, that was a really cool and epic quest. I really liked the mask ball that they did. I liked a lot of the characters, especially the Orlesian characters. And mm-hmm. It was a good game, ultimately. I think people complained a lot about the battle system and the fetch quests, and that kind of overwhelmed the narrative around it. I wouldn't say it's the best RPG ever made, but...
Well, that's why it's on this list instead of the other one.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. If I were to recommend a single Dragon Age game to anybody, it would definitely be Origins, because it's been around long enough. It's kind of more in that classical vein. You can play it on PC, and you can probably play it on most everything at this point.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of interesting origin stories to kind of undertake. A pretty solid party system. Battle system's a lot of fun. Tons of quests to undertake. Yeah, it's a rock-solid classical RPG. It doesn't rise to the level of, say, you know, a lot of the other RPGs on this list, like Baldur's Gate 2, but that,
uh-huh.
So it goes, right?
Exactly. That's it's a good starter for this list, I guess.
One that you threw out, Nadia, was Undertale.
Yes. Undertale is an interesting example because it's not an old game. Like, how many years has it been? Maybe a few by now. I think it came out 2016?
I think October. It came out in 2015, actually.
Oh, God. I'm getting
it's
too old.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess one reason why Undertale resonates with me... besides the fact that you have these three very interesting narratives, narrative choices that you make, and they all kind of come together to tell their full story, is just so many games since Earthbound has been a thing have tried to be Earthbound, and so few games have managed to do it. And I feel like Undertale really captured the heart of what Earthbound is about without trying too hard to be, like, you know, all, like, wacky and goofy. It's certainly wacky and goofy at times, but it's also, is very, very much its own thing. It also plays around a little bit with, you know, your save files and stuff like that, and that kind of stuff I always appreciate. It screws me up a bit, but I always love it. Has a fantastic soundtrack. Toby Fox as a composer is just magnificent. It's funny because it's some people say, oh, should I play it? And it is one of those games where I can't guarantee you'll love it. You'll either just fall in love with it or say, I don't know what the deal is here. But for, God, like $10, you really, really can't go wrong.
One of the defining games of the generation, I want to say, along with like Witcher 3 and that kind of thing. When I was at PAX East, I was looking at the merch that you could buy at Fangamer.
It's all Undertale.
Oh, lots of Undertale stuff, along with Hollow Knight and Stardew Valley and that kind of thing. The real indie darlings to emerge out of this generation.
Yes. And I have to say, just as an aside, Fangamer stuff is just so goddamn good.
Yeah, Fangamer stuff is really good. I ended up getting a really nice illustrated Stardew Valley guidebook.
Yes, I saw that. It's really nice. And their clothing, I saw the Celeste hoodie that you bought.
I ended up returning it.
Did you really?
Didn't fit very well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. It seemed really nice.
It was nice. It was comfortable, but I think it needed to be just a hair smaller, actually.
Oh, but the big, boofy hoodies are fun.
Yeah, they're fun, but they just look awkward on me, so I ultimately decided not to go with it.
That's fair.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I think Undertale would be a solid and interesting choice for this list. As RPGs go, I don't know if you... I suppose it's an RPG. It's unconventional, that's for sure. It's definitely a take on Dragon Quest, but there's kind of a weird puzzle-solving aspect to it.
No, it's actually bullet hell.
Mm-hmm. But, like, there's a bullet hell aspect to it, but when I say puzzle-solving, I mean, like, picking the right dialogue.
Yeah, because you're talking about three routes. You're talking about the pacifist route. You're talking about the neutral route, which branches off into, like, basically over a dozen of its known endings. And you have the genocide route, which is... Toby Fox really pulls a fast one on you, because to complete the genocide route, you kind of have to, like, kill all these characters you've come to love. And some of them just, like, go down in one hit and is really devastating. And then there's the ones like Undyne and Sans, of course, who will just freaking massacre you if you don't know what you're doing. And I couldn't finish Genocide for two reasons. Number one, it was screwing me up emotionally. Number two, I could not get past Undyne. And I just kind of gave up. But I did look up the endings on YouTube. And just some of the stuff that happens in that Genocide ending, it is really, really screwed up and just really, like, wow.
Yeah, he really wants to have a general commentary on games, right? He wants Undertale to be a commentary on games. And it's effective.
It is very effective, I will admit. It's on the nose sometimes, but again, Earthbound's a bit like that too. So I can't really begrudge him for that. But I would definitely easily include it as like an honorable mention in our list.
Yeah, I could see it being an honorable mention and potentially being on there. And in terms of another game that is of interest, that kind of a defining game of a generation, I suppose, Dark Souls.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a tough one for me because obviously I have a huge amount of respect for Dark Souls. I think it was the best game of that particular console generation, kind of completely redefined from software as we know it. And it definitely has a lot of strong RPG elements. I mean... Okay, this is going to sound really gross, and it is, but when Sekiro came out, there were a lot of people on the message boards being like, oh, Sekiro is the game that is exposing all the frauds. All the people were like, I've beaten all the Dark Souls games. Oh, but how did you beat Dark Souls? Oh, you summoned in people to come help you? And you grinded tons and tons of souls and made yourself extremely OP and also had the ultimate death sword of Doom and were using the most OP swords. Congratulations on beating Dark Souls, which I don't care. You know, Dark Souls is such a great experience. I think that even if you mess around with mechanics, which I definitely did, I used the Dark Sword in Dark Souls 3, and I have no regrets about it. Because I just wanted to get through it, gosh darn it.
Well, of course. And, you know, every time a From Software game comes out, there's this reignited debate over should, like, you know, easy modes in games be more prevalent for accessibility reasons. Yeah, so every time a new From Software game comes out, there's always this, like, you know, big debate reignited about accessibility in games. And I feel like there's just no real one right way to play a game like Dark Souls, like we are seeing here, because now you have people, as you say, who are like pointing to Sekiro and saying, oh, this is the real way to finish the game. You know, if you use help of any kind in Dark Souls, if you use the OP weapons, then you're not doing it right. And it's like, well, okay, if you're going to have this argument, where does it stop? Like, if you're so adamant against like having, you know, quote unquote easy modes and whatnot, it just seems like such a pitiful kind of topic to me.
Yeah, it's just, you know, chest beating. Very much.
It very much is.
Yeah.
Ook, ook.
I am a better gamer than you. There's a strong gatekeeping aspect to it.
Very, very strong.
You don't get to be part of like this cool game that I have here. It's pathetic. But the upshot of all that is, it's a time-honored tradition to grind to the point where you can easily beat content in an RPG, right?
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
I still do it.
Yeah, but I guess ultimately I didn't put Dark Souls on here because I saw it, even though it has such strong classical dungeon-crawling hooks and it draws hugely from the dungeon-crawling or the role-playing tradition, I just see it as an action game.
I kind of do, too, to be honest with you. I played it myself for the first time when the remaster came out, and I enjoyed it, but I was like, well, it's strikes me more as an action game. I don't think about it when I think of my top whatever RPGs at all.
Yeah, like, games on here on this list, like Fallout New Vegas and Witcher 3 are, you know, they're RPGs, or they're action RPGs, but
yeah.
The role-playing aspect, the story and the decisions and everything are kind of paramount. The action, I want to say, takes a back seat to those elements.
Yeah, I agree.
Whereas Dark Souls, so much of the appeal of it is how good the action mechanics are in fighting the giant bosses and everything. And the story is really minimalist. I mean, it's cool. The story is really
great.
Cool. And there's tons of interesting lore to it and everything. But I don't know, like, when a game makes no qualms about prioritizing a certain aspect of it. Like, I look at Destiny, right? Destiny's a shooter. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah,
no, it's just
a looter shooter. It has loot. It borrows hugely from the RPG tradition. And why do we need labels or whatever? But I guess when I was trying to make this list, I was kind of thinking to myself, well, I want to... The game's on here... I didn't want to have any doubt about the games that I was putting on.
Right,
here, right?
Exactly. So I would see why Dark Souls would be removed from that list, but it's a fine candidate for this list.
Yeah, when I was talking to somebody, and I think I said along the line, they were like, is it an RPG? Like, whatever game we were talking about. And I was making an argument for it, and then I paused, and I was like, well, if you have to ask, maybe it isn't an RPG.
Yeah, that's fair, I think.
But that's such a stupid argument anyway, because whatever, games are games. Genres bleed into one another.
They really do, more than ever.
Don't necessarily mean anything, et cetera, et cetera. Like, if you put Dark Souls onto your RPG list, I'd be like, okay, cool. For this particular list, I wanted to be like, let's keep it mostly traditional. Okay, Nadia, you said you're a Final Fantasy IV supporter, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so do you think it should be on this list?
On the honorable mentions or the top 25?
Top 25. Do you think it should be there?
No, it should not.
Okay, why not?
Because much as I love Final Fantasy IV, and much as I respect what it did for the genre, and I'd still even probably give it a recommendation if someone asked me, I just feel like it has been surpassed several times over by several other games in the franchise. And again, if someone came up to me and said, hey, Nadia, which Final Fantasy should I try out? I probably wouldn't say, hey, start with 4, because it's just not a good answer.
Yeah, I think if somebody came up to me and said, which Final Fantasy should I play first, I'd say play 6.
Yeah, I'd say play 6, or hey, they tell me, oh, I'm really into the job system in Final Fantasy 14. You know, I'd say, hey, why not go back and give 5 a try?
I love extremely stats-driven, crunchy RPGs with lots of grinding. What should I play? How about 5?
5, by all means, go for it, man.
Yeah, 5 has held up and stood the test of time better than Final Fantasy 4, I want to say.
Yeah, I would say so. Just the mechanics it's built on have really, by themselves, have stood the test of time. Even if the story isn't as good as, well, I wouldn't even say it's Final Fantasy IV's story is that great, but...
I don't think either of them have good stories.
No, and of course, Final Fantasy IV on the SNES has such a terrible translation anyway. And the version of the game, other than Complete Collection, which does have a good translation and is very easy to get, is the DS version, which is Again, I would not say play that game unless you have played Final Fantasy IV, you know, the original, and like it. It's a very confusing state of affairs for Final Fantasy IV we have going on here.
Why do you like Final Fantasy IV still? Why are you a supporter?
I'm still nostalgic for it. I like the characters. I do like the simplicity. I do like the game does all the thinking for me. Like, here is your party. Don't like it? Go screw it, because it's all you're getting for now.
Good soundtrack, too.
Good soundtrack. Great soundtrack. If you play it on the complete collection, the sprite work is really nice. It's just a good feeling that to go back and play that game once in a while. And that's just, a lot of it is nostalgia. And I do kind of like the end game. A lot of people hate the end game where you like plunge forever into the moon. But I do love how you go into the moon like totally unprepared to take on Zemus. But by the time you get to the bottom floor of that fiasco, you're just like a bunch of supermen and superwomen. I just really love that feeling.
What's your take on Final Fantasy Tactics?
I was never huge into it, but I never it's been a very long time since I played it, so I should really give it another shot, because I know, again, it's a really, really respected entry in the series, for really good reason. I know we kind of left it off the list, but I don't know if you had a reason for that in particular.
I picked Tactics Ogre because I like the fact that you have story choices. I think I like the fact that you have a lot more characters. I think that Tactics Ogre Let Us Cling Together for PSP is a much better definitive edition than pretty much anything that Final Fantasy Tactics is able to put out. And maybe the only thing that Final Fantasy Tactics has over Tactics Ogre is the fact that you can break the game into a thousand pieces. Like, it's completely ridiculous in that way. A shout out to our mutual friend Shivam, who... So we did a Final Fantasy Tactics episode of Retronauts just not too long ago. It's not out yet. I don't know when it's coming out. For all we know, it'll be out from 6 months from now. But
probably.
Shivam had the guidebook for Final Fantasy Tactics there, like the original Prima Games guidebook.
Oh, beautiful.
And
that must have been so fun.
And his eyes would just light up, and he'd grab it, and he'd start flipping through it, and he'd be like, and then he would throw out this particular build that he recalled from Final Fantasy Tactics that he loved that was completely ridiculous. And he said he'd put like thousands of hours into Final Fantasy Tactics, and I was just like, man, you're like a maniac for this game, Shivam.
When he's like a maniac for a game, he's a maniac, but it's a lot of fun when he is.
I think he said he's never actually beaten it.
Really?
Yeah, because he can't deal with beating it, because then the game would be over. That would be that.
I understand that feeling very, very strongly.
That's why I will never beat Skyrim.
Yeah, there have been a lot of games I just haven't beaten because I can't deal with the ending. Like, I'm just still kind of pausing on Red Dead Redemption 2 because I don't really want to finish it.
Yeah, finishing is like being dead.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, because then the world's over. The story's finished. It's time to move on. And you're like, okay.
I want to move on.
I can start over, I guess. I don't want to start over. I like this game.
I
want
to start over. Yeah.
But now there's too much other entertainment. Anyway, Final Fantasy Tactics was a really interesting take on the job system. I think it's certainly the more beloved and maybe even the more impactful of the two. I mean, people certainly remember Final Fantasy Tactics over Tactics Ogre, but it's not about influence, Nadia. It's about picking the best RPG. I think Tactics Ogre is a better RPG than Final Fantasy Tactics. If you ever played it, I recommend go trying it out. It's really awesome. It's a different flavor from Final Fantasy Tactics, but it's really good by itself, and I think it does a lot right.
Yeah, it's definitely on my to-do pile.
Yeah, and go listen to the episode in which we talk about it if you don't remember it. I mean, we could talk about a million games in Square's catalog, right? I mean, Final Fantasy X, Final Fantasy IX. I feel like we've talked a fair amount of Final Fantasy IX. Xenogears,
Secret of Mana.
Yeah, Secret of Mana is a big one.
Yeah, there's a reason why it's on the SNES Classic.
Yeah, it kind of helped to define a lot of action RPGs.
It did.
Yeah.
Because Zelda was like kind of a precursor to it, of course. But
kind of bored me, though.
Did it really?
Yeah, got kind of tired of it really fast. I put a real effort into playing that one and finishing it, but I only got about halfway through before I just kind of got sick of it.
Yeah, close enough.
It was really awesome for the time. It's still all right. It's a decent co-op RPG, but like actually fighting the bosses wasn't that fun.
I really wish they'd done a better job with the PlayStation 4 remake they had coming out, and just, you know, because it had some good ideas, and one of them was, like, they overhauled the bosses to be a lot more fun, but then there was everything else. But yeah, the bosses in the original Secret of Mana, if you don't have, if you don't grind to level up your magic sufficiently, you will probably die.
Man, I got completely annihilated by the bosses in that game. Especially one of the early ones, the tiger thing.
Oh, that goddamn tiger. Yeah, they totally nerfed the tiger in the remake.
That's good, because
it is.
Emily and I were like, oh my god, what is going on with this tiger guy?
Yeah, he's an asshole.
He is an asshole. So yeah, somebody mentioned, and they were a little sad that Xenoblade Chronicles 1 wasn't on this list.
I would easily include Xenoblade Chronicles 2 over, I loved 1, but I just feel like 2 is bigger. It takes the original game's vision and just makes it bigger with more quests. The only thing I'd say is a little worse is the character designs.
I would recommend Xenoblade Chronicles 1 over 2.
Would you really?
Yeah, because 2 is... Well, first of all, I don't like the characters of 2. And second of all, I think that the battle system of 1 is tighter and more interesting. The Kasha element is okay, I guess, but I think I just preferred I preferred how focused the battle system in the original Xenoblade Chronicles was. I liked how when you were fighting the different bosses and everything, that being able to do damage was highly dependent on what weapons you were particularly using, and so it required you to kind of mix and match the different characters. I thought the robots that you were fighting were cool. I thought it was very weird that you were on like the shoulders of giants. I would love that game to be on Switch, actually.
No, sure. I'd play it. I'd play the hell of it if it was on Switch.
It came out on 3DS, and it was not good on 3DS.
No, it was 3DS, and I had the new 3DS. It really struggled with that game.
I didn't like the guy with the squeaky voice in Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Oh, Tora?
Yeah, I didn't like that guy.
Well, all Nopons suck. I mean, there's tons of Nopons in the first one, too.
Yeah, I don't like
them. And in Xenoblade Chronicles X. Yeah, they're assholes. Like, they're just like, I'm saying assholes a lot. I'm tired. I'm sorry. But, yeah, I think, like, Monolith Soft is trying very hard to make them, like, you know, beloved, and it's just like, I sorry,
mascots.
Dude, I don't like them.
You know, go buy little plush toys like Ewoks.
I'm not going to. Sorry. Like, you know, a cool mascot is like Jack Frost from Persona. He's, like, you know, vicious. He'd kill you as soon as, like, you know, he'd shake your hand. But, yeah, they just try a little bit too hard with the Nopons.
Yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles is good, but I definitely see it as a second-tier RPG.
I wouldn't have put it on the top 25 list. Again, it's a series I love very much, and we talked in the last episode how much the soundtrack in Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is just mind-blowing, but I would... sometimes, like, the fact that it's experimental makes it, like, kind of a little bit difficult to enjoy at times.
It's experimental-ish. It's hard to really sort out where it's going. I guess it plays...
Yeah.
I was talking about how I wanted turn-based games, RPGs, in, like, kind of a blockbuster context. That's about as close as we're going to get.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. It's fine. I think the story... It's weird, given the heritage that it has and its connections to Xenogears, that the story isn't really ambitious at all. It might even be its worst part.
Yeah, it is kind of funny because, yeah, you're right. Xenogears had, like, just the most, for its time, which was like, wow, what the hell? Well, what are they doing with this story? This is crazy.
Yeah, I don't want to dunk on Xenoblade Chronicles too much because I do enjoy the first one quite a bit. But I guess
I enjoy them both.
I see it as maybe a half step above the Tales series. Which I also see as a second-tier RPG, which a lot of people love those games for various reasons.
See, I've never really... The only Tales game I really played was Fantasia, like on the SNES.
I played a few of them over the years. I played Vesperia and that kind of thing. And,
yeah.
I mean, it didn't really stand out to me, ultimately. Okay, so a few more games that ultimately didn't make the list. We briefly mentioned the Trails series. Trails in the Sky, I did actually play for a while, but it didn't hold my interest that much. I know that people really advocate for it, and it's out on Steam, and I recommend it. I'm still waiting for somebody to really, truly make the case for it. The best I can see is that it has a great story, is what it comes down to. Yeah. The battle system is okay, but people really enjoy all of the political intrigue and The different characters and everything. Like, they were really getting into it, despite the, you know, relatively low production values and all of that. Yeah, I know that we had Jason Schreier on X number of years ago, and he made an extensive case for us. So maybe go listen to that episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, someone sell Cat on this, I guess. Unless people have already tried and they've all failed.
It seems like the kind of game you would like, but maybe you should just play Trails of Cold Steel instead.
Yeah, that's my plan.
Yeah. Okay. And then also Ultima Underworld. Are you familiar with this one, Nadia?
I am, actually. I haven't played it myself, but it is a very unique RPG for its time. That's extremely influential.
Yeah, really cool take on the dungeon crawler.
Yes.
And, I mean, it tells you what things were like back in the early 90s, that it was a big deal that you could look up and down.
Advancement.
But it was really cool to be able... It had a lot of influence on games like BioShock and System Shock and those kinds of games. And being able to gather up items and use them in interesting ways, that they were trying to have this kind of emergent experience in the way that you played these games was kind of interesting, I suppose. I didn't put it on the list because I felt like Ultima 7 was kind of the greatest example of Ultima.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Ultima Underworld 2... Like, it's hard for me to be like, oh yeah, this game totally holds up. It's really old. And you really have to put yourself in the mindset to be able to play it, but go to it.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those games where I appreciate the legacy. But yeah, but looking back at it, I'm like, I think I'd rather go play Final Fantasy VI for the billionth time.
But at the same time, like, you know, it's not necessarily always about like, oh, is this game extremely accessible, right? I mean,
right,
some games, I mean, if you look at a game like Vampire the Masquerade, for example.
I mean, they got to be fun to play. Mm-hmm. Like,
No, and, I don't agree, actually. Is this game fun to play is a kind of metric that puts you in a weird headspace as the way that you judge a game. Because,
well, maybe, but like, does a game want to make you like kill yourself? Like,
does a game make you want to kill yourself? I don't think this game makes you want to kill yourself. It's just old.
Sometimes old games make you want to do that.
Okay, well, I guess you just have to turn in your retro gamer card, Nadia.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is there any other games that you want to highlight that shouldn't have been on, that should have been on this list?
I actually wrote down a few.
Okay,
let's see here. I wanted to give a shout out to Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door, which is the best Mario RPG ever. Don't at me.
Okay, why?
Because Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door is, number one, you wouldn't believe it, but it just has like one of the best stories that I've ever played in an RPG. It has one of the best localizations. It's hilarious as hell. You get to the town of Rogueport and you see like all this crazy stuff, like, you know, like a chalk outline of a toad's body.
Hilarious.
And you see like gallows in the center of the town, and it's like, oh well, I've
so
got.
So you're saying is this game is really dark?
Is very darkly humorous for a Mario game, but outside of that, it looks really good still. Like, I could easily play this game now and, you know, not be offended by it. The soundtrack is great. It
gets memed a lot.
What's that?
It gets memed a lot.
It does get memed a lot, and there's a good reason for that. The character is like, it has like one of the best supporting casts, I think, of any RPG ever. You have, like, I love the fact that Mario teams up with, like, you know, enemies. Like, he teams up with a Koopa named Koops. He teams up with Goombella, a Goomba. He teams up with, you know, not an enemy, but, like, a baby Yoshi, who's, like, kind of a punk. The battle system is very simple, but very compelling. It is very action-based the way that Mario and Luigi is, except much more simple. I do like Mario and Luigi's battle system, especially in Bowser's Inside Story, but kind of volleying things between the two brothers can get quite complicated. With Thousand Year Door, it's a little more traditional. You have yourself and you have your party member who helps you out, and you can use his skills to support you. The paper aspect of the game is implemented in interesting ways. Like, if Mario needs to cross a gap, he can turn himself into a little paper airplane and float around. Princess Peach is in the game, and she has like this really interesting subplot involving a kind of HAL-like computer. It's just a really, really fun experience all around. And there's a reason, if there's any reason why people curse Miyamoto, it's because they say he ruined the Paper Mario games, which I don't fully agree with. But I do agree that he kind of put out the call to nerf the story in the next game, which was, I think, Sticker Star. And that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way because the story was so strong in Thousand Year Door.
One more game that I want to throw out as an honorable mention is Neverwinter Nights, which came very close. It was on this list a few times and then got pushed off, and then it was on, and then it got pushed off. I think Neverwinter Nights is certainly like right up there with BioWare's catalog, or not BioWare, whomever. It's certainly right up there in that particular era, right? And
right.
The thing that really worked for Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2 was that it was really ambitious in the way that you could design different quest lines and that kind of thing. It had multiplayer. It was also extremely, like so many of the games on this list, it was also crazy buggy.
Yeah.
To the point of being like completely broken. But I always thought it was interesting that BioWare, like one of the ways that you could like essentially turn in a portfolio for becoming a writer over at BioWare was to make a questline of Neverwinter Nights 2 and just pass it in.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah. And that's a D&D based game, right?
It is a D&D based game, yeah. It still has a very large following, and I would even possibly consider putting it at like number 26 on this list, yeah.
So it just barely got edged out of the club there.
Maybe just barely got edged out. It has a very good legacy, but maybe I would take the 25 games that we have on here already. Just a hair over Neverwinter Nights 2. Still an excellent RPG. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, do you have an RPG that you think that we missed? I'd be curious to hear what you think it is. I have Lunar on this list. It's a series that I don't know extremely well. I passed over it more than a few times when it was in the bargain bin because it always seemed to be there with the PlayStation. The Silver Star,
that's like it's so in demand now, like that's kind of crazy.
That's hilarious because I saw it all the time.
I was like, see, I never had a Sega CD, and that was one thing. It was definitely one of those series I always wanted to play, but I never got around to it. By the time I even thought of get it for my PlayStation, it was already like $1 billion. And I said, well, there goes that. But I played the DS one, which I'm told is terrible, and it was terrible. So
it might be the best RPG on the Sega CD though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it was like so novel at the time to see like these, anime scenes where like characters singing and whatnot. And they look back at them now and they're like, oh, that did not age well. But at the time, it was pretty cool.
Nocturne was cute. No, I mean, it's very anime, but at the time, it was awesome.
At the time, yeah, very much at the time.
All right. If you want to share the RPGs that you thought should have been on the top 25 RPG list, send me a note at catdownbailey@usgamer.net or also send me a DM. Okay, let's get on to the mailbag. Okay, those were the honorable mentions of the game RPGs that need to be on the top 25 RPG list. I'm probably missing a few, but I'm sure that you have a whole bunch you want to add. In the meantime, we got comments from people who want to talk a little bit about the games that actually did make the list. Sammy J9 says, Chrono Trigger is absolutely deserving of the number one spot for all the reasons you mentioned, but one of the things about it that is often overlooked, pacing. Chrono Trigger is one of the best paced games ever made. You've pulled through the plot at the perfect speed with each and every new thing you discover of time period you go to is an absolute delight somehow in managing to never feel too brief or too long. And the game only being around 20 hours probably helps that. I have nothing against long games, but Chrono Trigger just feels perfect in how it nails speed and pacing.
It really does. And I think one thing that I can attribute to that is thinking back to when I played it, I don't recall a time when I actually had to just stop and grind. It just seems like wherever you were and however you fought, that had you covered.
They also add, the only game I'd put on it that didn't make it is Xenoblade Chronicles. It's a personal favorite. And can I gloat a little and say I nailed like the top 12 games several months ago, minus Ultima 7? Did I win a cookie? Anyways, I can't wait to see what you decide to do next. Yes, you do win a cookie. I'll send it in the mail to Sammy J9. Just send me your address.
It gets back. I guess there's all stale and nasty.
No, then I'm not going to send you a cookie. Pancraz says, regarding the comments someone made a few episodes regarding Final Fantasy VII to the band Nirvana to make the point that FF7 should have been included in this top 25 list as well, I must say that a better parallel would be comparing Nirvana to Square, as at that level you'd be comparing two creators, not a creator and a creation. And in that case, Square has multiple entries on this list. Kudos for not putting FF7 on this list, as its exclusion made everything much more interesting. Not that I think a Fire Emblem game should have replaced any of these 25, but as a fan, I'm curious if an FE game was ever even considered, which one? I would say probably Thrasia 776 would be the Fire Emblem game that I would seriously consider, possibly Fire Emblem Conquest. Fire Emblem, that's another tough one. I think it's really great and classic turn-based game, but it's so heavy on tactics and so light on actual role-playing that it's hard for me to put it on this list necessarily.
Yeah, I agree with that. If I did, though, I'd be like the real scrub and I'd include Awakening.
Mola Ram says, thank you for not choosing something like Dark Souls. I thought it was going to be that until I realized that Chrono Trigger hadn't been mentioned yet. So yeah, good choice. I would have found the best soundtrack question super difficult. I probably would have gone for FF6 also, but so many recent games like Xenoblade and Octopath Traveler have amazing soundtracks. I could listen to the second Octopath Traveler battle theme also. Oh, and I loved Nadia's choice of Quintet for best developer. I still think that Terra Enigma should have made the pantheon of great RPGs if only more people had gotten the chance to play it.
Yeah, the Quintet is like one of the biggest tragedies of our time.
And then Max Bebo has a list of like 5 billion categories. Do you want to hear a few of them?
Sure.
So they have best RPG hero Jude from Tales of Exilia, best villain Kefka, best RPG quest Lair of the Shadow Broker from Mass Effect 2 is a good choice. Best RPG developer Spiderweb Software for Pure Perseverance. Best dialogue system, Alpha Protocol. Well, that's an interesting choice. That's the spy game.
Oh.
That was designed by, God, who made that one? Oh, Obsidian, right? Yeah, they totally made Alpha Protocol. Art design, Persona 5, turn-based combat, Chrono Trigger, action combat, Dragon's Dogma, Dark Arisen. I like that choice. That's a good one. Best cast, Tales of Exilia. Yeah, that's an interesting choice. I don't care for Exilia exactly, but I know a lot of people really like that one. Best victory theme. Yeah. What do you think they picked?
Oh, Final Fantasy?
Final Fantasy VII. But then the best level up theme is Final Fantasy XII.
That's a good point. Yeah, I like that.
Best RPG developer did their best despite a ridiculous publisher deadline. Star Wars The Knights of the Old Republic 2. Yeah, that's true. Best world, Thedas from Dragon Age series. Runner-up, Evelisse. I think Evelisse is the best.
A good one. I think so. Evelisse has its shit together. I really like Evelisse.
I don't care for the Dragon Age world. Best RPG pet. I think that's one that we... Have we done this episode yet? We should do that one.
No, that would be a good episode. I would enjoy that episode.
The dog from Dragon Age Origins. I mean, it's got to be dog meat from Fallout, right?
No, I was going to go with the saber kitten.
All right. I'd be curious to know if you guys have any of your own categories. Leave a comment. In the meantime, Axe of Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. You have all of the information that I've repeated 5 billion times, but make sure that you subscribe to my Twitter on @_cowpat and Nadia's @NadiaOxford. Subscribe to our newsletters. Follow all of the social media for US Gamer. I'm not going to be here next week, but we are going to run an episode. Our old buddy, Anthony Agnello, is going to be taking over next week's episode.
Yes,
so
it is going to be chaos.
Nadia and Anthony always have way too much fun, and it's a total party, so please look forward to that. But in the meantime, I'm going to Spain. So screw y'all.
Yes, have fun.
I'm out of here.
Screw y'all. I'm going to Spain.
Maybe I'll talk about some Super Robot Wars tea when I get back. This episode somehow went 90 minutes again, which is ridiculous. But until then, for Nadia and myself, thanks for listening. And until next time, for episode 202, thanks for listening. Happy adventuring.